The second parasha today is entitled Tzav. It's an imperative verb, meaning give the command, and it's from the same word we get mitzvah. It covers Leviticus chapter 6 through 8. God tells Moses to command Aaron and his sons how to carry out their priestly duties. Now, as Dave aptly showed us, these previous chapters had to do with the offerings from the perspective of the people. These chapters concern the offerings from the perspective of the priests. The parasha opens. Oh, there it is. Picture of my woodpile. Well, that's what it looked like a couple of months ago. It's gone. But the parasha opens by describing the process of restitution when one person has defrauded another, either perhaps finding lost property and not returning it and lying about it, or having been entrusted with something and then claiming that it was lost or stolen when you actually had it and lying to the owner. Now, the person who did this had to make full restitution plus 1/5, 20% of the item's value. The guilt offering to the Lord cannot be made unless and until complete restitution to the owner has been made. And there's a lesson for us in this, that we must make our relationships with one another right before we would presume to come before the Lord. And Yeshua talked about this. In Matthew 5, he said, therefore, if you're presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. One of the first commands in this parasha is that fire be kept burning continually on the altar. It was never to go out. Both the historian Josephus and the rabbis tell us that during the time of the Second Temple, there was actually a special day that was set apart where everybody could bring contributions of wood so that the supply would never run out and the fire could be kept going. The lampstand, the menorah that once stood in front of the temple, coupled with this commandment that fire be kept burning continually on the altar, is the basis for the traditional Ner Tamid, the eternal light that usually is over the ark in most synagogues. It's a reminder of the days when the temple stood and represents the hope that it will be built once again. Chapter 7 describes the peace offerings. These were particularly significant because they were altogether voluntary. With the peace offering, a person might simply want to show gratitude to God for something good he did for them or for his mercy. But the peace offering, the shlamim, these were very serious matters. Anyone who ate any of the meat of a peace offering in a state of uncleanness would be put to death. The most significant of the peace offerings was the thanksgiving offering. If you had been delivered from an enemy attack or healed from a sickness or had taken a vow during a time of trial and distress and now you were safe and sound, you could bring a thanksgiving offering. Then there was the free will offering. Perhaps for no other reason than that you just wanted to say how much you loved and appreciated God for his goodness, his kindness, you might bring a free will offering. And the rabbis regard the thanksgiving offerings to be of the highest order, declaring that during the Messianic age, whereas all other sacrifices will have served their purposes, these will continue on. Peace offerings illustrate how much more is possible than what I would call minimalist religion, playing church. In every generation, there have been those who did the least possible to squeak by, and yet there were others who had a vibrant, living relationship with God. And so the peace offerings, in that sense, were something of a barometer for one's devotion to the Lord. Chapter 8 describes the consecration of Aaron and his sons as priests in fulfillment of God's command. Their ordination, if you will, was an elaborate ceremony. There were washings and anointings, ceremonial robes, head coverings, and the sacrifice of a bull and two rams. Some of the blood of the second ram was put on Aaron and his sons' right earlobes. Some of it put on their right thumbs, and some of it put on the big toe of their right feet. It paints a picture for us, one of the need that those who would serve God must have listening and attentive ears to him, obedient hands, and cautious feet. The mind, the will, and the ways of a man of God must all be submitted to God. There can be no compartmentalization. A man's private life and the public discharge of his duties are not separate and unrelated matters. The whole man must be consecrated to Adonai. So should it be for all of us who are called a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Well, let me give a few closing thoughts. When I thought about the Torah demanding an additional 1/5, 20% of the value of anything taken by fraud, I was reminded of Zacchaeus. You remember him? The wealthy and despised tax collector of Jericho. So desperate was Zacchaeus just to catch a glimpse of this miracle-working rabbi about whom he'd heard so much, that as Yeshua came into town, Zacchaeus climbed up into a sycamore tree just to get a look, risking public humiliation just for the chance to see him. And when Yeshua came right over to him, called him by name, and asked to dine at his home, which is a great honor to have a great rabbi like Yeshua come to your home, Zacchaeus was so overcome with joy and gratitude that immediately he pledged to divest himself of half of his estate and to pay back, you ready? 4 times, 400%. Forget this 20%. 400% to anyone he had defrauded. That was a day of genuine salvation. But not everyone appreciated what Yeshua did for them. Think about the man at the pool of Bethesda who had been lame for 38 years, whom Yeshua wondrously healed. Not only did this guy not bother to thank Yeshua for his kindness, but ended up reporting him to the religious authorities. And consider the incident that took place when Yeshua was on his way to Jerusalem for the last time. 10 lepers in a village came and begged him to have mercy on them. Yeshua granted their request, and as they left, all 10 of those men were instantaneously healed from their leprosy. Yet only 1 of the 10 came back to thank him. And it turns out he wasn't Jewish. Yeshua marveled at the ingratitude. Well, may God help us to not be like that. In fact, the Hebrew word Yehudi, Jew, is from the verb yada, to give thanks or praise. So the true Yehudi isn't necessarily the one with all the outward religious trappings, but rather the one from whose heart genuinely gives thanks to God and gives him praise. Be that person.